Naiba yil Troy Wiles Whelan, Naiba Wargamay Balmalgani, Mayai, Naiba Wargamagan Giramagan, Kukuyimin de Mal, Naigu Naji Wanjan, Naiba Bagel Bara, North Queensland. My name is Troy Wiles Whelan. I'm speaking to you in Wargamay language. My people who I make connection to are the Wargamagan people, the Giramagan people, and the Kukuyimindir people. For me, being the chairperson for the North Queensland Regional Aboriginal Languages Corporation, there was a varied amount of issues that we wanted to discuss: the retrieval, the maintenance and the protection of the Aboriginal languages, and particularly in the areas that we service, and how they are funded, those programs. At the present moment, what we do is we put together a submission, and that submission is then given to a committee, and then they come back and then they issue us with the funding. At the present moment, we've got all those language groups, and there's seven regions, and I'm referring to about 63 languages plus, and we are the peak body within the region, and we're the largest language centre in the whole of Australia. Most of the other areas around Australia only have one to two or maybe three at the most, and my issue is about, you know, the funding of these programs to retrieve those languages for those communities in this area. As far as we are concerned here in the Language Centre, it's a continuous process. It's not just about, you know, okay, we retrieve the language and that's it. It's about the continuation of these languages for eternity as far as we're concerned. In one community, there is one lady who's in her 90s and she's the only person that can speak her language, and there is no one else. And even for her, being what we consider to be a fluent speaker of her language, it's difficult because she hasn't had a lot of practice at it. One issue being that she was told not to speak her language, and also now she has got no one who is able to speak her language. She has to rely on a service such as ours, where we can retrieve that language through her recordings and her being part of that process, start up language workshops and language lessons for her so that she can impart that knowledge. The other issues that we have is such as remoteness. Because of such the areas that we have, it makes it very difficult for us being here in Cairns to actually get out to like places such as the Western Outback outside of Mount Isa and Cloncurry and so on and so forth. And there's communities in between where access is difficult at sometimes during the year. We need four-wheel drives, you know, you need permission and so on and so forth.
So what was the key issue you really wanted to stress when you were speaking to the Standing Committee? Obviously, you didn't have a lot of time, but what was that one point you really wanted to convey and get across?
The main point for me is that Aboriginal languages are part of this country, and that we need to show and respect the fact that Aboriginal languages are important to our identity, it's important to our country, it's important to everything, our daily lives, our health, because there is a lot of our community that got language, their whole profile changes because they then find that they've got some position in the community, they know who they are and where they come from. So yeah, it's important to identity and pride.
You mentioned the 90-year-old elder who is essentially the only speaker of her language. How many other cases do you think are like that in your area?
Okay, to date, I suppose I couldn't give you an accurate number, but I would say 80% of them have got the same difficulties. The elders or speakers of that language are disappearing quite quickly.
And what are the key factors that are creating that?
In some of these communities, the law was, and I'm referring to non-Aboriginal law, was that these languages were never to be spoken, because in some areas, as for example in mine, I've noted it was like you were conspiring to do something. And so you were never allowed to speak your language, not in public, as it was known back then.
And other issues, I imagine it's not just that's an issue these days, particularly in some of the more remote communities. You would think that there is a sense of freedom in sort of speaking and using the languages, but I imagine there are other challenges and factors that are inhibiting the use of language as well.
You know, there's a whole lot of things, I suppose, in those remote areas. You've got issues of people being able to speak the language, but then again, they've been removed and taken to different places. And that's happened all around in our region that we service, but also around Australia. It's also the having to get to those communities. For our role, it makes it very difficult because we've got so many. And these people, those that are speaking the language or have held that language, are very old and they've got health issues. And quite often, you know, you may be able to speak to them one day, but you may not be able to speak to them on another given day because of the fact that, you know, they're in hospital or they have to travel somewhere.
What can help you create a better process through which language retrieval can actually be achieved?
Okay, so there's a number of things. And I suppose, you know, here we go again. It's about funding, one of the issues, because funding is very important to us as an organisation. One, it would allow us to provide the physical resources to get out to those communities and help them do that. Again, like I said, we've got 63 languages plus 7 regions to get across. If we had adequate funding to maybe provide another support person that can go out and help with the recording of that language and the retrieval of the language, we'd get across the region a lot better. And funding also helps with so many things. You know, there's technology as well that could help assist. Although, you know, we prefer that, you know, the language is spoken first before it becomes, you know, we're using technology. And we need to get across to these communities. I can't think of any other way we're going to do this because we do it for the love at the moment anyway. But, you know, there's only so much love you can give. Everything does have a cost at some point. And I look at it from the point of view, the biggest cost is the fact that we may lose these languages very quickly.
There might be someone sitting in their car or listening to this and thinking, what is the value of a young Indigenous child continuing to learn their language through school or through other means once they reach a certain age? They're going to be speaking English predominantly within broader society. Why not just embrace that?
From my perspective, for me personally, it's been a huge journey. When I was much younger, I was in my early childhood, I was surrounded by a lot of the elder men. For me, language was just a given. And then as I got into my teens and, you know, there was all these other distractions, it didn't have much to do with language. And then I went away to work, which I went to work in mainstream. Once I was in mainstream, well, I didn't have that contact with a lot of the language. And then it was in my 30s when I came back to my country, Bagir, it was stated that a couple of my aunties and my uncle said, we're going to start doing some of our language retrieval. Immediately, I just went, yeah, it's who I am. And so I started getting involved with it. Now, in the very beginning, it was very difficult for me because I'd been, quotation marks, sort of westernized and I'd forgotten. But once I had started the language program and the retrieval of my language, I was starting to pull things out of my head that I'd forgotten for quite a long time. For me, it's priceless because it's my identity. It made me feel proud. It was an affirmation of who I am, you know, it confirmed who I am. And when it comes to like, okay, what's the benefits of it? Well, I find most communities where people live, there are Aboriginal connections to that country. It's part and parcel of that respect process of respecting that this was the language that was there. You know, we still use language all around Australia. You know, I mean, we use this stuff all the time. It's just that we haven't recognised it. The value for Aboriginal people to learn their language, it's just enormous. There's so many things they would be able to, you know, the connections to their country, where they come from, who they are. It makes, I believe it would make them feel much more part of this whole society and their local community. There's so many benefits from it. It allows them to hold their heads up high too and understand that, you know, look, you are Aboriginal, yes, and you should be proud of it, because that seems to be the issue. You see a lot of our younger people, you know, we've got one of the highest incarceration rates, you know, of Indigenous people in this country, in the world. If you bring, I've had a opportunity to talk to some people who have been incarcerated and talking to them about who they are, and gave them some language material, and their whole attitude changed. And it's a remarkable thing to see happen to someone, because they felt like they had a responsibility then, that, you know, okay, I'm incarcerated, but, you know, I'm a person and I've got connections to this land.